You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome in to Hour 2 of the Civic Media Spotlight. Chad Holmes is up first, and this week on his show, the big topic was the Wausau ballot drop box. After its illegal removal by Mayor Doug Dinney, the box returned, and Chad discussed the situation with guest Nancy Stensel.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, the first day of October 2024. The time is 8:07, another very pleasant start in North Central Wisconsin at our 98.9 WXCO studios. A lot of sunshine, a lot of blue skies, a little bit cooler to start things off. Temperature of 49 degrees. I am Chad Holmes. It is the Chad Holmes Show on 98.9 WXCO. Online at bowfallsradio.com, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. It does look as though that the Facebook stream after a couple of days is back, working very nicely. And if you'd like to see a video stream of what we're doing, you can go to facebook.com, go to the 98.9 WXCO page, click on that, and then be able to see us, be able to add your comments to the Facebook page as well that we will see. If you would like to call or text us, you can do that as well. The best way is through the Civic Media app. Just download the free Civic Media app and then be able to open up the 98.9 WXCO portion of the app and be able to hit the button to either call or text us. Or you can just dial us up, and the number is the same, whether you want to call us or text us, 715-382-9297. That's 715-382-9297 to join us with your questions, your comments. If there's something we should be talking about, do it. 715-382-9297. Coming up this morning on the program at 8:20, we'll be talking to meteorologist Brittany Merlot. She'll let us know about the weather. And again, it's not going to be as warm. I mean, we were seeing temperatures knocking on the door of records for recent weeks. Things have cooled down just a little bit here to start things off, but still just an outstanding morning, a very pleasant morning. So we have to wear a jacket. So be it. It's still beautiful out there. And maybe it's not going to be quite as warm, but it does look like it's going to stay dry, and there's still going to be plenty of opportunities to enjoy what's happening outside. And we'll get all the details as we get closer to the middle portion of the work week with Brittany Merlot coming up at 8:20. Then at 8:35. For this morning, we'll be joined by North Central Wisconsin Labor Council Vice President Nancy Stensel, as she was one of the signatories on a release yesterday discussing the issue of the drop boxes that were removed by Mayor Doug Dinney 9 days ago. Yesterday, the box was returned and is back out front of City Hall. But even with that development, Nancy Stensel, along with a number of others, sent out a release talking about their viewpoint on what happened, what needs to be happening as well. And we'll talk to her about that coming up at 8:35 this morning. And then at 9:35 this morning, going to be talking to a woman named Jacqueline von Edelberg. It's very interesting. On Friday afternoon, I was about to head out to cover high school football. But the doorbell rang, and I went over there, and it was Jacqueline von Edelberg. And she says, wanted to explain what she was doing here in Wausau. She was going to be over at the event that we talked about last week with the Minocqua Brewing Company's Kirk Bankstead had a Get Out the Vote event at Sylvan Hill on Friday of last week. Well, Jacqueline von Edelberg is from Illinois, and she said, come on out and I'll show you something. She showed me this van, pink van, and it's a Get Out the Vote van. And she is part of a coalition of women's groups that are going around for a big Get Out the Vote campaign for the November election. So we're going to talk at 9:35 to Jacqueline von Edelberg about these groups that have got together. Talk about that very interesting pink van that she showed off to me here in Wausau on Friday, and talk about some of the areas she's going to and the groups are going to and what the point is of this big effort made by multiple women's groups. So that's Jacqueline von Edelberg coming up at 9:35 this morning here on the program. Before we go any further, need to say good morning to our in-studio engineer, our in-studio producer, Ian Welsh. Ian, good morning.
Good morning, Chad.
I think I want to start off this morning talking about the big news that came after we were off the air yesterday, that the Wausau absentee ballot box removed a week ago Sunday by Mayor Doug Dinney was put back out front of City Hall. But the issues continue, the discussions continued, and we're going to hear more about it, as I said, with Nancy Stensel coming up. But I mentioned just in the last 20 minutes, I did my weekly shot on the Pat Kreitlow's Up North News program, and the idea that people like Republican Party of Marathon County Chairman Kevin Hermanine, who sent a letter to the city clerk, the Wausau clerk, Caitlin Bernardi, urging her to delay opening the box. Hermanine, who tends to go way out there as part of a right-wing mega coalition, says it was unconscionable that the locked ballot box was outside City Hall without being secured to the ground, allowing anyone to tamper with it. And other Republicans and megas are still trying to find fine print with the Wisconsin State Supreme Court decision that basically says that, again, the city clerk is the one that decides on the drop boxes, not the mayor, not anybody else. But you have folks like Herman, and you have folks like WSAU's Chris Conley, again, who I just was rereading his editorial, his commentary yesterday. And one thing that he needs to realize and others need to realize, he tries to basically say this is all about those liberals, that basically this is a ginned up charge. This is a big red herring in order to try to get Doug Dinney out of office. Mr. Conley and others like him need to realize that this issue did not come up because liberals made it up. This issue came up because the mayor of Wausau, on a weekend, on a non-business day, put on the old hard hat, went on a Sunday to City Hall, got out the dolly, and removed the official absentee ballot drop box and moved it into his office. It was not liberals who told the mayor, "Hey, mayor, go out there and remove that box. That would give us a great issue to gin up to try to remove you from office." So everything that Conley talks about is, again, false. And, again, that really is not a surprise, because most of what Conley says gets skewed to the mega far-right Republican point of view. So, again, and basically says that any investigation by the Marathon County District Attorney's Office will be partisan, because he says they're filled with partisan Democrats. So basically, when I read that, does that mean that when a Republican or a conservative does something in Marathon County, they can't be investigated? Charges cannot be filed against them because, according to Conley and those like him, that the DA's office in Marathon County is filled with partisan Democrats? Is this a get-out-of-jail-free card, something that he knows a thing or two about? I don't understand the idea that somehow this is an issue ginned up by Democrats. That is baloney. This is something that came up because the mayor of Wausau decided that he was going to make this an issue. The mayor of Wausau decided, after his discussions with the city clerk, where he did not get his way, that no was not going to be acceptable as an answer. So he decided to move it. And basically, my theory, and again, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not somebody that has studied the law and understands everything, but my theory is the reason that that drop box is back out there yesterday is because over the days, the mayor talked to lawyers, talked to other allies, and found out, hey, you don't have a leg to stand on right now. You better get that box back out there before more damage is done and more opportunity is given for you to get into trouble.
It seems like a reasonable observation.
Because if he really thought he was in the right, then he would not have returned the ballot box to where it is. Mm-hmm. He found out, no, I guess maybe I don't have a leg to stand on in this situation. So, again, we're going to find out where we stand with this issue. What are the next steps? Is this truly the liberals going after Mayor Doug Dinney to drive him from office? We'll find out from one of the signatories, again, on a statement that was released yesterday. We're going to talk to Nancy Stensel about this coming up again. This story is not done yet. And again, this is just plain politics. And again, when you see what Hermione says, when you see what other prominent conservatives say, again, they want to make sure it's as difficult as possible to vote. And one of the statements that was made by the mayor is that we have enough ways to vote. We have a lot of ways to vote. It's not also his position to decide, hey, there's enough ways to vote. That, hey, okay, we've reached a certain level. All right, we officially have enough ways to vote. No, that's the city clerk's job in this case. So, again, it's going to be a story to keep an eye on as we are down to, what are we down to? 5 weeks to go for Election Day. Yep, we are 35 days away from Election Day here in the United States of America. And I think we're all looking forward to getting to that point so the commercials can go away, but
yes.
It's not going to slow down. It's actually going to get worse, I think, in the next 35 days when it comes to the commercials.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a political ads every 30 seconds on TV and online as well. But I agree that the mayor made a choice, and he didn't consider the repercussions of what he did. You know, he thought it wasn't going to be a big deal. Again, I could be wrong.
And one other thing, real quickly, before we have to go away for a quick timeout, is that in this commentary that Conley makes again, we've seen conservatives continually chip away at trust when it comes to elections. And when he says something like, well, there's a bunch of partisan Democrats in the DA's office, he's trying to chip away at trust in the criminal justice system. And again, I find it hard to take seriously somebody that's been knee-deep into the criminal justice system twice in the last year making comments that maybe he thinks that does he think that he was arrested twice because of a liberal conspiracy in the criminal justice system? I don't know. But again, you're chipping away at the trust, first of the elections and now the criminal justice system, and that is wrong. Mm-hmm. Coming up, we're going to talk about the weather. We're going to talk to meteorologist Brittany Merlot, and then we'll have Nancy Stensel coming up after that at 8:34. The time is 8:19, 98.9 WXCO.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight for this week, we'll go to the Maggie Dawn Show. Maggie talked with the youngest living player to run the bases with the Negro Leagues, Dennis Biddle. Mr. Biddle shares some of his impactful experiences on the diamond and in his life since. He started yesterday's Negro League Baseball Players Foundation in 1996 to support players and their legacies.
Get pumped up, Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It's my privilege and honor. I'm so excited to be joined today in honor of the MLB playoffs and the inclusion of Negro League statistics finally in Major League Baseball statistics by the youngest living player of the Negro Leagues. He is 89 years young, folks. His name is Dennis Bose Biddle, and he almost did not play in the Negro Leagues. Mr. Biddle, when we were talking last, you left off with, you were about ready to head off to play football on a full ride scholarship at Grambling State. And you got a phone call from the Chicago American Giants, one of the Negro League teams, and they wanted you to come up and try out, sir. What happened next?
I really didn't understand tryout, if I was on the team. I wanted to play baseball. And I went to Chicago, and I guess I tried out for the team. I thought I was on the team. I, I tried out and I made the team. So I joined the Giants in 1953 as a Negro League ball player. I signed
and
a
you
contract.
Were, and you were how old, sir, when you started playing Major League Baseball for the Negro Leagues?
I was 17 years old. I was I had just graduated from high school, and 2 weeks later, I was playing my first professional baseball game in Memphis, Tennessee. I was with the Chicago American Giants.
That is incredible. And you played two seasons with the Chicago American Giants, and then Major League Baseball called. Not the Negro Leagues, but the MLB, did they not, sir?
Well, see, you know, man, in my book, I tell about how that transpired because major leagues they didn't scout us, and I was on the major league, the Negro League team after Jackie Robinson became a training ground for the major leagues. And people don't know this, but Bress Ricky's long range goal was to use the Negro League as a minor league system. They don't write about it much because a lot of our history was not written down. A lot of the stats you talked about was not written down also, because the Negro League team could not hire a statistician to travel with the team. The players themselves kept a lot of their own records. In my book, Secrets of the Negro Baseball League, there's a way thing was happening back then, because if a major league team were interested in a player that was on a Negro League team, they had to purchase his contract from the team he was on. The team he was on would get enough money from the major league to pay those older guys that were training us to keep the league going. This is what's hidden. This is something that's not written down about what happened in the Negro League, and this was after Jackie Robinson. And I sum it up by saying very little was written down about the Negro League from 1949 to 1963.
That is how Major League Baseball used the Negro League, sir, as you were saying, as sort of a minor league, a farm league, if you will, for MLB. And yet it sounds like, you know, this was a relationship that was very asymmetrical in economic power and who got to call the shots. And sir, you got to the first day of spring training for the Chicago Cubs, and the unthinkable happened.
Right, I broke my ankle in two places, but what I really want to say, that ended my really major league career, but I felt I could still run as fast as I ever did, but my ankle never healed. It was broken in two places. But what people don't know, man, is that players like Hank Aaron, Ernie Banks, Willie Mays, all was just like I was. They had that long binding contract from the Negro League team they was on, and the Major League team that was interested had to purchase that contract. It's in my book, Secrets of the Negro Baseball League, because they didn't write about that. They didn't know what was happening back then. The Negro team was getting the players ready for the major league because that was a money-making industry for the team at that time. It didn't last for about four or five years, but it ended up that way, yes.
Folks, you can find that book by Mr. Biddle at DennisBiddle.com. He also runs and he is the president of yesterday's Negro Baseball Players Foundation. And do you still have that store in Mayfair Mall? I remember seeing the store that I believe you've run for years with your wife, Patrice, in Mayfair, where you've got some of your memorabilia, your book, and you share some of your recollections of your time in both the Negro League and Major League Baseball.
Yeah, thank you. We do still have the store. Right now, it's not open. It will be open the 1st of November. It's called Legacy Sportswear. It's at Mayfair Mall. We moved to a different location, and that's why the store is not open at this time. It will be open November 1st.
Yeah, check it out in Mayfair Mall. Again, folks, I'm talking with Dennis Biddle, the youngest living player of the Negro Leagues, in honor of MLB playoffs, game two of the wild card, Brewers and New York Mets meeting this evening. I'm going with my pops. Mr. Biddle, my dad was a pitcher as well. Never made it to any of the leagues. But I did want to ask you, sir, because I heard that you are the man who beat the man who beat the man. And yeah, I want you, we're going to have to take a couple messages, but can you stick around for a little bit more? Because I want everybody to know you are the man who beat the man who beat the man when it comes to pitchers. And I want you to tell that story. Do you have a few more minutes for us, sir?
Yes, I do.
Wonderful. You're not going to want to miss it. Again, talking with Mr. Dennis Biddle, the president of yesterday's Negro Baseball Players Foundation, the youngest living player of the Negro Leagues at a very young 89 years old. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. More to come, including a discussion with Sarah Spain, the strategic communications director of Emily's List. We're going to talk about that debate when we come back.
The Maggie Dawn Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday afternoons from 2 until 4. To learn more about this show and all of Civic Media's programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to this week's Civic Media Spotlight. On the Dom Salvia Show this week, Charles Franklin, professor of law and public policy and director of the Marquette Law School poll, joined Dom to talk about the latest Marquette poll.
And thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Appreciate you tuning in. Super jazzed right now. Charles Franklin, the director of the Marquette Law School polling, joins us. Charles, welcome. Got Matt Rothschild in the studio with me as well. Welcome, Charles.
Good to see you both.
Likewise. Big day today. We love it when the polling drops. And again, unfortunately, this is after another debate. Charles, do you plan these things? I mean, how does this work out all the time?
It's just a miracle that happens every single time.
Let's dive into the numbers at the top end. Vice President Kamala Harris versus Trump. What are you seeing, Charles?
Harris by 4, 52-48. That's the same as it was in the beginning of the month, early September. That's also up from where she was when she first got in the race in July. We had Trump up by 1 with registered voters, but we had Harris up by 1 with likely voters. Now it's a 4-point margin for Harris with both registered and with likely voters.
So the trend it's the same though. So she's kind of, she's tapped out.
Well, I don't know, but we just didn't see very much change between early September, which was the week after the Democratic convention, and late September, which was the week after the debate. And so in both of these cases, we just didn't see a whole lot of movement other than what we saw from July to early September. And personal characteristics of the candidates are pretty stable too.
Charles, Matt Rothschild here. The thing that impresses me about Harris in this poll and in the last one is that she's over the magic 50 mark. I mean, she's at 52%. And a lot of times campaign folks and their own pollsters say, if you get over 50%, you're pretty good. And here she's standing still at 52%, which is, you know, more than 50 plus one.
Well, that's right. Though, in fairness, now we ask people if they'd vote for Harris or Trump, or haven't they decided? And about 6% say they haven't decided. We then ask the undecideds, if you had to choose, who would you vote for? And that's where you get the 52-48 with almost nobody who says, no, I really can't choose. Still, she's been running in the upper 40s or over 50 in the multi-candidate race. She's also a 4-point lead, 48-44 with registered voters, or 49-44 with likely voters. So you can see that she's, if not at 50, she's in that high 40 range.
Yeah, and campaign managers sometimes say, if you're at 48 or 49, you can crawl to the finish line.
Charles, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Has dropped out of the race, but the Supreme Court has left his name on the ballot. I see that he is what? He's polling at about 3%. How's right. that trend over time? Now that he's actually out, has it gone down? Do people know it? What's your sense?
Yeah. He's been declining steadily all year. Back when he first got in the race, or when we first started asking him about him in the early spring, he was at 16%. Then he fell to 13, then to 8, and 8. Last month, he was at 6, and that was after he had dropped out. And 86% said that they knew he had dropped out, but he still got 6%. Now he's down to just 3%. Whether he'll fall more or not, I don't know. If you put all of the third party candidates together, they're getting a total of 6% of the vote. And compare that to 2016, which was the all-time high this century, of 5.5% of actual votes for third party candidates. So that means that the third party vote, which was running in the mid-20s 8 months ago, is now back to 6%. But that's as high as it's been since 2000.
But the odds are good, Charles, that that's going to diminish by the time we get to Election Day.
I think so. The other third-party candidates are getting either 1% or 0%. Kennedy at 3% could still fall a little bit further, I think. And ultimately, the pressure is the wasted vote argument.
Yeah.
If these are mostly folks that don't like either the Democrat or the Republican, or else they'd already be voting for them. But when push comes to shove, do they want to cast that protest vote, which may be a very sincere protest, or do they decide, you know, they'll vote for who they perceive as the lesser of the two evils?
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School polling, that came out today. Okay, Charles, let's talk about the Wisconsin senatorial race. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin versus millionaire Eric Hovde. What are we seeing?
Yeah, that's a 7-point Baldwin lead now. That's up from a 4-point lead early in the month. Over the whole year, we've had her as low as 4, and we've had her as much as 7 at earlier points, not just the 4 and the 7 this time. So it's been pretty consistent in that range. We did have one result that showed it a tie among likely voters. That was back in April, I want to say it was. But it didn't show up the next time, so it looks a little bit more like a fluke rather than a real change there. And on favorability, she's 47 favorable, 47 unfavorable, a dead even, 0 net favorability, whereas Hovde's a negative 9 net favorability. That's the same as he was last poll. And, excuse me, people have gotten to know him a lot more. Over 80% didn't have an opinion of him back in April, and that's down to just 18% now.
It's not helping him.
But in that time, both his favorables and his unfavorables have moved up, and the unfavorables a little faster than the favorables, though, for the last two polls, he's kind of held the balance even at a net negative 9.
With regard to the favorables, how about Trump and Harris and the VP candidates as well, Charles?
It's mostly a sea of negativity, but some more negative than others. For Harris, it's a net negative 3, 47 favorable to 50 unfavorable. Trump's a negative 11, 44 to 55. J.D. Vance is also net negative at minus 13, 38 to 51. And 11% say they don't know enough about him. But then we get to Tim Walz, who's the only one that's net positive at plus 7, 45 to 38, and a rather big 16% that still say they don't know enough about him to have an opinion. And finally, Kennedy is at negative 15, 36 to 51, and 13% don't know.
Charles, it's hard for a presidential candidate to win with a negative 11 unfavorability to favorability. Has there been a, in your memory, a presidential candidate who was able to win that far negative?
Yeah, his name was Donald Trump. He won in 2016.
How deeply, how bad negative was he then?
He was worse than 11. I think it was in the high teens, but Hillary was in the low teens or high single digits. 2016 was the first race since the 70s when pollsters first started asking the favorability question, in which both candidates were net negative for most of the campaign. Trump considerably more than Clinton, but as we saw, that wasn't actually what determined the outcome. So you'd certainly rather be at minus three than minus 11. But I don't think you can take that minus 11 to the bank when you look at the history of Trump, including in 2020 when he just barely lost Wisconsin, but had a solidly net negative rating then as well.
Charles, one of the things that popped out at me when I was watching you this noon, giving your presentation on these new numbers, was independents. They're moving in Harris's direction and Tammy's. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, and this is, I think, one of the more interesting changes that we've seen in the last two polls. In the winter and spring, independents were favoring Trump over Biden by a little bit. And since Harris got in the race, they were pretty evenly divided in July. But now in both the early September and the late September polls, they're favoring Harris with about 61 or 62 or 3% of the vote. Hmm. And so that's a notable move. Now, independents can change their minds. I say they're fickle because they really will change over the course of the campaign. But now we've got two polls in a row that are showing them at around 60 for Harris. So I still wouldn't swear that they won't move before the end. But we've seen them going for Trump earlier in the year. We've seen them evenly divided. And now we see that significant advantage for Harris with them and two polls in a row. In the Senate race, they've also moved. They were always more favorable to Baldwin, but now they are also in the 60% range for Baldwin. So a little bit of a move there. Generally, I would say they are contributing to why Harris is up four now instead of maybe tied or up one, is that movement. Democrats are nearly unanimous behind Harris and are very close to unanimous behind Baldwin. Republicans a little less so. There's still 5 or 8% crossover from Republicans to either of the Democratic candidates. But the independents are shifting the race a bit in the Democratic direction right now.
Can you talk, Charles, about enthusiasm? I know Trump was in the state yesterday bragging about he's got all the enthusiasm. That's not what your numbers showed.
No, but he's got a lot of enthusiasm. early in the year, Republicans were outpacing Democrats by 15 or more points on enthusiasm. When Biden dropped out, Democrats shot up 22% from poll to poll June to July. Republicans went up by 7 points, I believe it was, in that same period. And then Democrats went up again in early September after the convention and have held basically flat. They're down 1 point this time. But Republicans had kind of moved up after their convention and then flat. But now they've moved up again so that it's 71% of Democrats very enthusiastic to 67 for Republicans. So a close margin there and a reversal of the big Republican lead early in the year. And back to those independents, half of them now say they're very enthusiastic. That's up from the mid-30s earlier.
So this suggests we're going to have a huge turnout again, don't you think?
I think we are looking at something like 2020. Whether we quite reach those levels is always a mystery, I think. But when enthusiasm was 15 or 20 points below where it had been in 2020 back in the spring, I was thinking we really might see a drop-off in turnout. Now, with this higher enthusiasm, I would guess we're awfully close to the 3.3 million that we saw in 2020.
Charles Franklin, director of Marquette Law School poll. Find him on Twitter at polls and votes. Just a couple minutes left, Charles. This one kind of makes me a little sad. Stop talking about politics. What's the question here and what's the trend line, Charles?
It's terrible for radio, I got to tell you. The question is one that goes all the way back to the gubernatorial recall in 2012 in our fifth poll ever at the Marquette poll. We asked, is there anyone that you've stopped talking to about politics because of disagreement over the election? And in, we've asked that each presidential year, as well as that before the recall. And in 2012 and 16 and in 20, it was about the same. It was 34, 35, and 36 had said they'd stopped talking about politics with somebody. This time it's up 10 points to 46% who say they've stopped talking to someone. So a bit of an increase, and especially in light of how we thought that things were really tough for the recall and for 16 and for 20, but those were all about the same. 10-point increase this time, I think that tells you something about where we've come in the last 4 years.
Charles Franklin, director of the Marquette Law School poll. I hope you never stop talking about politics with us, Charles. Thank you for coming around. Certainly appreciate it.
Always happy to. Take care.
Thank you. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. Matt Rothschild in the studio. Come back with your calls, 855-752-4842.
The Dom Salvia Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Closing out this week's Civic Media Spotlight, we'll hear from Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Pete welcomed on Paul Mercurio, writer for The Late Show with Stephen Colbert and comedian. They talk about Paul's work on a sports show, The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and his current show, Permission to Speak, now on a tour coming soon to Milwaukee.
Welcome back.
That is my favorite TV theme show song. Growing up on the northwest side of Chicago, this is going to sound weird, but I would watch Good Times. I wanted to live at Cabrini Green. I loved the Evans family so much, and I wanted John Amos to be my dad. No offense to my own dad, who's wonderful, but he passed away. Very sad to hear that. A great actor who would turn up from time to time still in really fun roles. My guest is Paul Mercurio. He has a one-man show called Permission to Speak, and it's coming to Milwaukee on October 19th. And we are talking to him about the show and writing and stand-up and all kinds of fun stuff. Paul, so fun. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Rupert loves the water. It's one of my favorite lines in a movie. And she's like, Rupert? I'm tired of playing Rupert the Monkey Boy. Just so great. So your format for Permission to Speak, I got to say, I am kind of in awe. Very gutsy. Because you really never know what you're going to get. I'm sure you get gold at times from the audience, but what do you do when they don't give you gold?
Oh, we have a trap door. And I hit a button and they're gone. There's an alligator pit.
Thank God.
Extra money, but it is. It's a whole. It's like a tank, and then we have people pay to see the people get eaten by alligators.
You know what it is.
It hasn't happened that much. I can tell. The only time is of all the shows I've done, maybe one or two. Somebody's like a little like trying too hard. You know,
yeah.
To be funny instead and getting ahead of me instead of me letting me run it because it's not like. It's not about really, I'm funny and I'm doing, I'm doing a lot of my own stuff in the show too, you know, but when I'm talking to people, it just comes out of the stories. Like I had this one guy, he was in a bad mood. I go, what's going on? He's like a, I don't know, 30 something guy, 30 years old. He's a kind of a tough guy. I go, what's going on? He goes, I just broke up with my girlfriend. I go, what happened? He goes, yeah, she wouldn't listen to me. I go, oh, communication issues. Yeah, you could say that. I go, what happened? He goes, well, I told her not to shoplift at CVS. And I go, wait.
Oh, God.
Did you just say at CVS? He goes, yeah. I go, it was okay if she shoplifted. He goes, oh, yeah, well, I taught her how to shoplift. Anyway, what? Wait. Now the audience is like, heads are exploding. Did he just say, he goes, oh, yeah, I've been stealing stuff since I was a kid. Like, I would steal bikes in the neighborhood and then sell them back to the kids or I'd beat them up if they didn't buy them. Now, everybody's like, what is going on, right? So we get into it, and apparently he was stealing nice stuff. He goes, I steal nice stuff, you know. And my girlfriend was bugging me. She wanted nice stuff. And I go, I'm not going to teach you how to shoplift because you're just going to shoplift at a stupid place like CVS. And what's the point of shoplifting there? What are you going to get, like lipstick? So, like he thinks this is, like, he's not trying to be funny. Petey thinks this is normal, okay? It's not that you shouldn't shoplift. It's just shoplift at the right place.
If I told you once, I've told you 1,000 times. Shoplift at Walgreens.
That's
exactly
funny.
Oh, my gosh.
And so how did it end? So I go, what happened? He goes, sure enough, I get a phone call. She's at CVS. She gets arrested. I go down there. I'm in the back of the squad car. She got arrested for, like, lipstick and a hand mirror. And we got a huge argument. And I go, what happened? He goes, I broke up with her. I go, when? A few days later. He goes, nah, I'm in the squad car. I don't need this aggravation. And that was like,
oh, man.
The audience is like, and so you see that and you go, that's normal to him. And it's good for us to see people that don't live like us.
Right.
You don't have to approve of it. But you sometimes you should get out of our own silo, and that's kind of what happens just organically, but it's also really fun and kooky and fun.
And that's obviously gold. I mean, you can't even write that. That's amazing. Should we do another clip, Paul? Why don't we do another clip from your show, and you can tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so in this clip, this is a young guy, maybe late 20s, and he's gay, and I'm always fascinated by gay people that have to keep stay in the closet and how hard that must be. So we talk about that and how he came out to his mother, finally.
Okay. I was a pretty gay little boy.
How did you react when he told you?
The first thing she said was, why are you telling me at 10:30 at night?
And that's real life, right? Like, that's real writing in a show, right? Because like, what does that mean? What did she mean by that? What she really meant by that is, I'm your mother. I've known you've been gay your whole life. I've got a meeting in the morning. Can we do this later? Like,
yeah, I totally see her point. Honestly, I mean, that's like stress right before you go to bed. You're going to worry about your kid. You know,
exactly. You know, you know, it's like I'm your. You don't think I know? And so, and again, that was somebody that everybody went up to after and met the mother and like. And it's so there's this just this kind of cool bonding that's happened, but we don't force it down people's throats. And if somebody doesn't want to say, you know, come up, that's fine. Or if somebody doesn't want to, you know, so sometimes people just tell a story from the audience. But like a lot of times what I get is, oh, you should have called on me. I had a great story. Like they turn into kids, like right. Wishing that they had gotten called up.
Teacher.
Really awesome, you know?
Exactly. This is along those lines. My Uncle Jim was a very funny guy, and one of his kids said, Dad, I got to talk to you. They sat down, and my uncle got really nervous, and the kid just said, I want to be an actor. And he's like, oh, thank God. And he's like, what? He goes, I thought you were going to tell me you were gay. He's like, well, what's the matter with that, Dad? What if I was? He goes, well, nothing. I just wouldn't know what to do. Like, if you told me you murdered someone, I'd call you a lawyer. I don't know what to do if you tell me you're gay.
Exactly.
Oh,
how it works.
It's funny.
Really, and so we just kind of hit on this really fun thing. I said to a woman one time, I go, what's your name? That's all I said to her. She goes, Nydia. I said, Lydia with an L? She goes, no, Nydia with an N. I said, that's a unique name. How'd you get that name? That's all I said. She goes, oh, my father got my mother pregnant with me, but at the same time was having an affair with a woman named Nydia, and he named me after the woman he was having an affair with. And everybody's like, oh, my God.
All right. That's why you have to see this show, folks. It's at the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts in Milwaukee, October 19th. Paul, this is really fun having you here. We're going to do a little bit more with Paul after Civic Media's award-winning news. We're coming right back. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.